Well, happy National Video Game Day, Dan. I know you've...
And to you, Jason.
Thank you. Welcome to Drive Time. Mark Fry, we just booted him out of the studio. Just like, get out of here.
What is this weeb business?
Are you surprised that I sang the national... why do I keep saying that?
I don't know.
I could sing the national anthem.
Sure you could.
I don't think it'd be very good.
No, not well, but you could sing it.
Someday, I will go into an audio booth, record me singing the national anthem, and then you can play it on the show. You can decide, is it worth playing or not?
Okay.
You'll probably decide no, but maybe I'll be better than
you
think I am.
Well, that's just it, though. The worse that you
what
are...
What if I'm great at it?
Well, that's the thing. The worse you are, the more likely I am to play it. If it's good, I mean, okay, well, that's fine. But if it's like, you know, Roseanne level bad... we're playing that.
You don't want to disrespect the anthem by having my terrible version, but what if I'm good at it?
You know, it's just not that interesting to me.
You like it better. You like it better.
We didn't play the call her daddy bit yesterday because she was great. Mm. You know, they do. The Cubs have a celebrity, you know, seventh inning stretch singer every single game. We did it because she was terrible and got booed out of the building. That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. But it's me. Does that doesn't matter?
Well, I mean, it figures into the calculus. I'm just saying it's better if you're terrible.
Hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, you're probably right. You're probably right. So today is National Video Game Day. I think one of the things that maybe surprises people about me is that I have... Mario Kart on my phone, and every day, I'm not kidding, every day I fire up the Mario Kart Tour, and I play a couple of Mario Kart rounds. Is that weird? It's a little weird. It's maybe a little out of character. You would think? I don't know.
Sure. I mean, you do you.
What is your favorite video game of all time? 651-461-9226. I feel like this, like, should I play a game right now? Would that be enjoyable?
I think that would be scintillating on the radio, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm just going to play a game while you guys
And the thing of it
in.
Is, like, the folks on YouTube that actually have video can only see you just... looking at your phone.
Oh,
so it's not even a, you know...
It's legit.
It's not even a video bit.
No, it's just I like playing this game, and I find it to be a stress reliever. And so I'm just going to take a moment and play a game. 651-461-9226. What is your favorite video game of all time? It's National Video Game Day. Dan, what is your favorite video game of all time?
You know, when the Nintendo Wii was a thing for about 5 minutes... I did love Mario Kart at that point. On the phone, I don't do a lot of gaming on the phone. I mean, like Solitaire, Words with Friends, Wordle, those kind of basics, you know what I mean?
Yep, I play Wordle.
But so, I have an affinity. Like, we were one of the first houses on my block growing up in the Grove that had an Atari.
Oh.
So, like, the classic Atari games.
Yes.
What was it called? Was it River Run or whatever, where you were the plane flying along the river? Bit. I mean, they're just terrible graphics-wise. But, and obviously, Pong is an essential.
So we were jealous of the Atari kids because
yeah.
My dad was kind of... We had something called Intellivision. I don't know if people remember Intellivision, but Intellivision was... I'm sorry, getting these texters, people texting me on my own phone. It's messing up this bit.
You're screwing up your Mario Kart.
Yeah. This round, I'm in second right now. This is not going great.
Hey, Lindsay, are you rolling on this for the Marconi?
I'm sure, like, if we had higher production values, like, I could screen share to the YouTube.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Even that would be pretty lame still. Frogger.
Frogger's a classic.
We got a frenzy. We got a frenzy going.
When I was a kid and you didn't have, you know, the... video games in your home all the time. There was a couple different restaurants that we'd go to that would have like the Pac-Man machine there.
Okay.
And it would annoy the, you know, bejabbers out of my parents because my brother and I, we didn't care about eating. We only wanted to play the Pac-Man machine when we went. That's a classic. A
lot of text for Frogger. So Intellivision was one of these games that the controller looked like a remote control for a TV. And instead of a joystick, it had a disc. Intellivision was one of those things that as a kid, the cool neighbor had the Commodore 64. And the Commodore 64 had Frogger, had like the cool stuff.
Breakout was another classic.
And we didn't have the Commodore 64. We had the TI-99/4A. That was our computer. The cool neighbor had Atari. She could play Pong. She could play Frogger. We had Intellivision, which if you're watching on YouTube, you can now see what the...
Oh, yeah.
Intellivision.
With the paddles?
Yeah. Now, Intellivision had a game called Burger Time. Do you remember?
That sounds vaguely familiar, yeah.
Burger Time, I think, was a real video game that, like, I think it had a console. I feel like I was at an arcade not too long ago, and Burger Time was around. And it was like, oh, Burger Time, man, that is cool. Area 51 says Lethal. And pinball. I'm a pinball guy. Adam's Family Pinball.
Oh, my buddy has a pinball machine. He's such a pinball freak.
He has a pinball machine at home.
At his house.
Oh,
I don't remember where he got it. Somewhere online, Facebook Marketplace, something like that. He tracked it down. He had to fix it up a little bit. But, yeah, it's a classic, man.
I have always wanted a pinball, my own pinball. My parents have a pinball machine at their house. And the game they have is The Shadow. And the little pinball machine is like, The Shadow knows. And you got like, it's very good. The bummer of a pinball machine, I think, is that it's always breaking.
That was a movie, right? The Shadow.
Yeah.
With Alec Baldwin.
It was.
That was the line. The Shadow knows.
The Shadow knows.
Yeah.
And that is the...
It was a terrible movie, but it was so bad, it was actually really good.
Hmm?
It's one of those movies.
I don't think I ever saw the movie, but Shadow...
You should watch the movie.
The Shadow pinball machine... which the internet tells me dates to November of 1994.
How about that?
Pinball is very good. I don't think that counts. That doesn't count.
No, not as a video game.
National Video Game Day. My kids, video games now, and I don't know, do you consider Fortnite a video game? Or...
Yeah,
some of these games, what else
is.
Do the kids play?
Yeah, it is. It's just...
Roblox.
It's just a different... kind of genre than what we grew up on, right? When you're talking about world building, that was never anything that we had the capacity to do.
No. SimCity was maybe
100%,
the closest.
Yeah, that's probably the closest for us. But yeah, it's 100% a video game.
Has the video game sort of stigma faded, you think? Because there was a time where like the video game, if you were a gamer as an adult, you were thought of as like a loser. You were a bit of a loser.
Pitfall. That was the one I've been trying to think of this whole time.
Pitfall.
Pitfall was a classic Atari game. We played that constantly as kids.
Pitfall. I have the music.
That's the classic 8-bit music right there.
Perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. That's all you needed.
Q-Bert was another, yep. And a texter says, Tempest was my favorite because nobody was better than me.
Q-Bert, those tend to be our favorite games, yes.
There is a photo of me as a child with like the final score screen with Q-Bert like on the 32-inch TV behind me. Because that's how hardcore I was with Q-Bert. Trying to avoid that like squiggly snake thing. Yeah. Q-Bert.
So we finally got... wasn't obviously the 64, but some sort of Super Nintendo, I think, is what we got when we were growing up. And Duck Hunt was the big thing.
Oh,
remember?
Oh, yes.
Duck Hunt that came with a gun. And then the problem was I sucked at it. And, you know, I'd get mad when the dog would start laughing at you, and I'd try to plug the dog, but you can't really do that. The machine won't let you. But my father, who, remember, was, you know, retired police officer, obviously is very trained. He'd come down and just ping, 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 and beat the game in about 30 seconds. And it just drove my brother and I
so
nuts.
Upsetting. So
it's like
upsetting.
It was just totally, and it was totally just a casual thing to him. He didn't even really care. He just, yeah, here, boom, 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 boom.
Now.
That was my least favorite game.
Brian from Andover says you are still a loser if you play video games a lot as an adult. Crash Bandicoot, yes, from CT, oh, yeah. Crash Team Racing. That was very good. Now, The Shadow was a radio show.
Yes, originally, yes.
Right. And do you know The Shadow's alter ego? Because that is another like little audio clip they yeah. play in the game where they're calling out to Lamont.
I should know this.
Lamont.
And it was an L name.
Lamont Cranston. All right. Happy National Video Game Day. Centipede.
Celebrate however you like and let no one shame you.
Oh, Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. I was so bad at Donkey Kong, but I wanted to be so good. There's a restaurant in St. Paul called Mario's that has Donkey Kong. I'm pretty sure it's Donkey Kong in the place, and it's just a quarter.
Oh, nice.
And the last time I was at this restaurant, I took my parents there. And just like a childhood moment, I had to ask my mom for a quarter to play the game.
I was just going
to
say, who carries quarters anymore?
Maggie DeRussia is who carries quarters. Drive Time back in just a minute. We're definitely going down a rabbit hole here about old computers that we had growing up. If you're watching on YouTube right now, WCCO Radio Channel, I'm showing an image of the Texas Instruments 99-4A. It is funny when you look back and think about the old computers that we had. You look at the fact that, like, my cell phone has more computing power.
By, like, an exponential amount.
By a bazillion, yeah. Right? Now, you had the Commodore 64.
We grew up with the Commodore 64.
Do you remember what other computers you had as a kid?
I don't necessarily, because I'm not sure. We hung on to the Commodore a lot longer than we probably needed to. We hung on to the Commodore so long, we actually went from the first external disk drive to it, like I was telling you, was a cassette tape player. So you'd have to put in the cassette tape, hit a button, wait like 5 minutes, and then you could play Lemonade Stand, which was annoying.
Oh, yeah.
Then eventually we graduated to the floppy disk. But I'm trying to remember what we did after that.
So we had...
It might have been into a PC from there.
I think the Texas Instruments was the first computer we had.
Yeah.
And I remember I could do some basic programming on it.
Yeah.
And then 1 year for Christmas, we got a voice synthesizer.
Oh, my.
And we were like, holy...
Look out now.
We have got a voice synthesizer. For the Texas Instruments 99-4A.
Yeah, so you got, that's the Commodore on the screen right now, right?
That's right.
So to the left of it is the floppy disk, but then on top, I think, is the cassette bit. I think that's what that is.
So weird.
They actually were putting computer programs on cassette tapes.
So the voice synthesizer for Texas Instruments, today you would call a speaker. It was just a speaker. But it was like magic. You're like, oh,
it
my
made
gosh,
sound.
I can hear something out of this thing. Very, very ridiculous. Then we went to the Apple IIc. I think that was our next.
We never had an Apple.
So we had the Apple IIc.
My best friend, that was their family, got into Apple products and were loyal customers forever.
It's, I'm pretty sure we had the 2C. But like playing video game, like we never had, it was always jealousy. And maybe this is just true of kids always. Like no matter what game system you have, it's not as...
You want what the other kid has?
Right.
Yeah.
So like we had the Texas Instruments and then we had Intellivision. But my friend Phil Alderman had ColecoVision.
Ooh.
And ColecoVision, that had cool video games. We were like, this So you go to visit Phil, and you get to play the cool video game that we had the lame video games.
Yeah, because and Phil comes over to your house, is like, what is this junk?
What is this? Yes, I know. I don't know. It's the kids today, do they have it better? Yes.
Absolutely.
Now, can you play the video games that the kids play now? To me, it's like so much motion and so much happening.
There's a lot going
like,
on.
How do you guys know? Like, it gives... This is my, like, I'm a 50-year-old man moment. I'm like, I can't even, what is even going on?
I mean, could I pick up Fortnite right now and be anywhere near competent at it? No. But, you know, a little time with my 12-year-old nephew, I'd figure it out.
You would figure it.
Sure.
I don't know. I think most of the research on video games actually is fairly positive.
Yes.
I think people have this idea that video game... I mean, you know, we all
went
like
that
to blame
panic.
Things,
we went through that panic in the 80s, 90s that, you know, any violent video game was going
to
warp the young minds and turn everybody into shooters.
And it's just not.
No.
It doesn't track.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And in fact, I remember years ago, like most of the major video games now, you can actually analyze them just like you would analyze a book.
Sure.
Because they have a story,
very
they have
story
rising
based.
Action,
yeah.
They have protagonist, antagonist. Like,
speaking of the story games, we should point out on the air, too, that our friend Lethal Migraine on YouTube brought up Oregon Trail.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the classic of all classic basic computer games.
For sure. And has a Minnesota...
And it was written and the code was written here in Minnesota, yeah.
And that had sort of... isn't there a movie being developed about Oregon Trail?
Probably.
I remember reading this announcement.
I don't know. Do people want to go see a movie that has a lot of...
It came out.
With a lot of dysentery in it?
I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
Because I thought a movie was being developed, and now the internet is telling me...
Been out for a while, dummy?
Oh, that's Oregon Trail. Oregon.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a different movie. That's a different
movie. I just Googled it, and I was going to play a little of the
trailer. Yeah, no, let's not do that.
And I'm like, oh, I think they spelled Oregon wrong.
No, they didn't actually.
No, it's a 2023 film called Oregon Trail. Well, check that one out. That's a real winner. It's 4:31. DeRusha Eats coming back in just a minute. A restaurant in Hopkins closed for months in downtown Hopkins because of a fire, ready to reopen. We will talk with the owners of Pub 819 and get reaction to the news in the restaurant world today that Cafe and Bar Lurkot is closing in September on Loring Park. That story just breaking, and we'll get reaction next on Drive Time. And DeRusha Eats is brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board. Today, we are putting in the spotlight a mainstay in downtown Hopkins that is about to reopen to the public after a long process of rebuilding because of a fire. David Benowitz, the president and co-owner of Craft and Crew Hospitality, is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline from Pub 819 in Hopkins. David, it's good to visit with you.
Hey, Jason.
How
glad we could connect today.
Yes. How excited are you to open a Pub 819 to the public tomorrow?
We're pumped. Yeah, it's been a long journey that we never thought we would be in, but we're here and we're ready to open tomorrow. You know, this fire happened back in November, and you never think you're going to get that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning from the alarm company saying that there's a fire at one of your businesses.
And what was that? You know, when that call comes, like, they don't know how bad it is. You don't know how bad it is, right?
No, it was honestly hard to assess until early the next morning because it was so we didn't have any power. It was
right.
And so we thought that it was just going to be the kitchen.
Little kitchen fire and whatever.
Exactly.
Right.
And when we assessed all the actual smoke damage to the building and the insurance company came out, they said, you know, this looks like it's going to be a total loss. And even at that point, we were negotiating with our insurance company. Like, I think we can keep this and this and this. Like, no, there's way too much smoke damage and it's going to be a complete loss, and we're going to replace everything in the building. So at that point, you know, again, we had never been through this before, so we thought it was going to be at most 3 to 4 months, but they said it could be up to a year. We're about in the middle. It's 7 months.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine you worry, you know, obviously it's Pub 819 has been a big deal in Hopkins for a long time, but you worry about your employees too, right? Like, what do they do in the interim?
Yeah, that was honestly, Jason, our biggest concern going into this. And, you know, fortunately, we had really good insurance, not only to cover the loss, but also to help compensate our staff. And we were able to retain all of our managers at our locations, and about 40% of the hourly staff that worked at the Pub back in November, we were able to place at other locations as well. So that was a huge help. And we have about 70% of our entire crew coming back.
Wow. How about that?
Now, so that's a big deal. Really big deal.
What do you attribute that to? What do you think made them want to come back? Because obviously a number of them had other jobs in the interim, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. They did. You know, I think it's, you know, from the beginning, I know we said we're going to be 100% transparent with all of you. We've never been through this before, and we're going to need your help to rebuild. And so we kept in touch with all of them every 4 weeks. We had virtual updates, and whoever wanted to be in that call could be in that call. And we went line by line exactly what was happening, the progress, what was happening with insurance, what was happening with payroll. And I honestly think because of that communication, they were in the know and there weren't assumptions being made. Yeah. And therefore, they were ready to go when we said it's time.
David Benowitz is with us. As you were kind of rebuilding the Pub in Hopkins, you guys opened another new location of your concept, The Block, in Rogers.
That is correct.
Which, so, like, obviously a lot going on. Your group, which has restaurants in Minneapolis, but also now, like, all throughout the suburban area. I mean, are you guys out in the suburbs more because there's more opportunity out there? There's better real estate. What has led some of your expansion that is, I guess, maybe St. Louis Park? Was that the first one you did out in the suburbs? And we're seeing more of that.
Yeah, so the first one we did on the suburbs was actually the Pub back in 2014 when we first opened. So I think it comes down to opportunity and, you know, working with cities that are really business friendly, that want to provide an opportunity and are just a pleasure to work alongside with every step of the way. Because it can be challenging with some cities. They can make it complicated and expensive. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons why we've chosen to move out to the suburbs. The one in Rogers was just a unique opportunity that was actually presented to us, actually on behalf of our contractor, who is based out of Rogers, that had a really close connection with the economic development director out there. And they were looking to replace the old Rogers Muni to a local full-service restaurant group. So that's how that connection happened. We weren't looking, especially with the Pub knowing that it was going to be reopening sometime in the summer.
Right.
We typically don't have restaurants open back-to-back like this. It's very challenging on the staff.
Yeah.
We're not bored, Jason. I'll tell you that.
No doubt about it. Yeah. And that Rogers just opened a little over a month
ago.
Yeah,
we're in week 8 now of that opening. So it's in the infancy stage, and it's going well. And the volleyball courts is a big differentiator out there. We have volleyball leagues 3 days a week, and it's been a hit with that community.
That's pretty fun. David Benowitz is with us. You know, the big restaurant news today is the news that Bar Lurcotte and Cafe Lurcotte is closing in September.
I saw that. Huge bummer.
Yeah, I think everybody has that reaction, right? 23 years. I have been getting calls all day from other news organizations trying to find out, like, is there a bigger picture to this, or is this unique to the fact that, look, you know, the D'Amico family has really been refocusing on Naples, where they've got a restaurant called the Continental, and then they have a Campiello, which there used to be one in Eden Prairie, but now their Campiello is just in Naples. Mm-hmm. You know, some of this, I look and I'm like, well, some of this is just like a family priority type situation, that they're full service and their life is more in Naples than it is here now. But I do wonder if there's a bigger picture about just how precarious maybe the full service restaurant world is right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's multiple reasons why, Jason, they're moving on with that store. And, you know, one of them, you know, could be, you know, the challenges that the industry continues to face, especially in Minneapolis with different regulations, and, you know, the minimum wage being what it is versus on the suburbs, you know, it's a big deal. And it costs a lot more to run a restaurant in Minneapolis versus the suburbs of the Twin Cities. So
is that different today, or do you think that it was always the case where it was a little cheaper in the suburbs? Has the minimum wage being $15 an hour, has that changed the dynamic?
It has. Yeah. I mean, it's changed quite a bit. I mean, 10 years ago, this wasn't as big of a deal, but with the $15 minimum wage, it is a much bigger deal with tipped employees.
Yeah.
That's challenging.
When restaurant owners talk about things, it being more expensive in Minneapolis, is that the biggest driver, or are there other factors that we don't think about?
I would say that's the biggest differentiator between running a store in Minneapolis versus the suburbs.
Sure.
You know, for a while, you know, some of the new regulations with, you know, paid family made a big difference, but now that's, you know, all across Minnesota, you know, for a while that was just Minneapolis. So that was a big differentiator. And different restaurants chose to rule that out, you know, how they wish. So, but I would say that minimum wage is a big deal. And that it is what it is for right now. I mean, we don't have a credit for tips, and that's,
yeah, that's the difference. So, like, some of our listeners maybe don't understand this, because if you live in Wisconsin, the tipped employees can have a lower hourly wage. In Minnesota,
that is exactly right.
Yeah, we don't have that. So
we don't have that exactly. Right.
Yeah, and so it is what it is. But the reality is, if you have, I don't know, if you have 10 people on the clock, and you're paying them $15 instead of $5. You know, that's $100 an hour times however many hours you're open times how many days, like that. Eventually that goes into the price of your burger. I mean, that's sort of how it goes, right?
It's a huge deal. Yeah. It's a huge deal. And if you were to poll our hourly staff members, they're not working for their hourly wage. They're working for their tips.
Yeah.
So then most of them, not all of them, but most of them, don't care if they're making 15 versus 10, 11, 12, 13, because it's the tips that they're really working for.
They're really getting the tips. Yeah. David exactly. Benowitz, so with us, congratulations on kind of recovering after the fire. I know Raspberry Festival's coming up. I was over at Pub 819 for, do you say 819, 819? How do you say it?
I say 819, but some people say 819.
Yeah. You're like, you don't care, just as long as you come and have some food.
Exactly right.
Well, it looks exactly great. I know Hopkins has been excited about it, and I have a feeling you're going to get crushed tomorrow. So go visit, but, you know, don't forget about these restaurants on Mondays and Tuesdays and those non-peak lunch times, all of that as well.
That's right. Thank you, Jason. Thank you. Appreciate it. We're really looking forward to opening to the public tomorrow. And as you said, the community is really excited to have us back. And we're going to be ready.
Good stuff. Yeah. David, thank you. We appreciate it. That's DeRussia Eats, brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board. Back in just a minute here on Drive Time. It is Twins Ticket Tuesday. We are giving away a 4-pack of tickets.
Not now.
When you hear the Win Twins sounder, when should people call, Dan? Well, not now.
Not now.
Yeah.
When they hear the Win Twins sounder.
Yeah. As 651-461-9226 is the number you call.
Or they could just call during Taylor's news.
Yeah, just keep
calling. We're not going to answer, but you can call.
You can if you want. Four-pack of tickets for Sunday, July 13th. That's this Sunday. Pittsburgh Pirates in town at 110. And that'll close out the first half of the season, right? Then
All-Star break.
All-Star break. Twins.com to get tickets. Big night at Target Field Friday. So you know I was at Ludacris at Taste of Minnesota this last week. I almost have to go to Target Field Friday for Nelly, right? Aren't Luda and Nelly sort of
your
two sides of the same coin?
You're speaking Mandarin to me. I have no
idea. You don't know who Nelly is?
I have no idea. I know who Nelly is, but I have no idea what the connection might be.
What's a similar genre, similar era? Nelly's 50, I think. Luda's like 48. How many annoying "it's getting hot in her" references are you going to hear idiot Twin Cities news people doing?
432.
Oh, my God. I can't. Chris Eggert on the morning news is going to be like, they say it's getting hot in her at Target Field because Nelly isn't. Ugh.